for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 289 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's the return of Frank Martin, creator of a really gripping, fascinating series called Modern Testament. He's been on the podcast before, and we've discussed this series previously, but now there's a conclusion looming, and I got a chance to read it ahead of time so we can talk about it and get you primed for the final anthology comic that's coming out. And of course, that's understating it. It's kind of a larger book, so you definitely get your money's worth. Frank and I talk about the characters in the last volume and what the future is for Modern Testament, at least what he can tell us. Then we delve into what else he's got coming and a lot of interesting things that I think you're going to want to hear about. So be sure to listen to what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I'm glad to welcome back to the podcast Frank Martin, creator of a series of, I guess, would you call them graphic novels? This Modern Testament Anthology of the Ethereal?
Comic anthology.
Okay, that would be a better way to do it. And this is the fourth volume, and what you're saying in there, this looks like to be the final one. How are you doing today, Frank?
I'm doing good. How are you, Wayne?
Good. Now, let's talk about the fact that you're wrapping this up. I mean, you know, not many comics conclude the way that you're doing it, bringing it to a conclusion. Is this the way you wanted to bring it to a conclusion? Because you've got several interesting stories. And then we'll talk a little bit about the final one, which I really like in there. But was this what you were aiming at during the whole time you were putting this anthology together?
I think so. I think it made sense because I had four horsemen, so four volumes. Kind of felt like a fitting number, to a nice fitting round number to end on. Mm-hmm. I always knew it was going to come to an end because they're standalone stories, so there's only so much you can do, and there's only so many characters that you could use, because you got to remember, it's only been four volumes, but it's three shorts per volume. There's been 12 stories, and that doesn't even include the free comic book day shorts that were released.
Right. Now let me go ahead and read this thing. I always like to read this thing that you have at the beginning. It's in red type, which I always like. Biblical beings, although ancient and iconic, struggle to be understood and find their place in today's society. Humanity has changed since their creation during the days of antiquity, and they along with it. These tales chronicle them on their journey of self-worth and purpose. They're stories of discovery we're currently writing every day in our own Modern Testament, hence the name of the book. So talk to me about one of the things I like in this book is that you start a story with one, and then you have a story in between, and you kind of get back to it. And there, that was kind of a neat thing. I haven't seen you do that before. Did you want to do that in this issue? Was that something you wanted to accomplish?
Yeah, I wanted to do something a little different, maybe throw a curveball in there. I haven't done a two-part story, so I wanted to kind of end the story on a little bit of a cliffhanger. And it kind of worked out naturally because I needed some time to pass. So it made sense in the context of the story, and it offered something different from this volume compared to the rest.
Now, the name of the first story is Better the Devil You Know. Do you want to give a little bit of a summary of what's going on in that story?
So this was – I had to use – the devil as a character. And I used a little bit of a trope, which is people make deals with the devil that they end up regretting in one way or another. So I wanted to take that story and put my own twist on it and my own spin on it. So the first part is obviously the main character making his deal. And then the second part later on in the volume would be when it comes back to haunt him.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you portrayed the devil when it first starts out. You know, people expect the devil to look a certain way, and he doesn't look that way, which I think that's really a great way to surprise us. Were you trying to communicate that the devil isn't necessarily what people think he is?
A little bit. I wanted to give him a little bit of a different appearance than what people were expecting, something new, because it's a problem with this volume in particular, which I emphasized in the afterword, was that people are familiar with these characters. They're very well known. They're very popular. They're used all the time. So I wanted to do something a little different while at the same time being true to the way people are familiar with them.
Mm-hmm. I love the contract when it shows up. You know, the devil promises him stuff, which, you know, we kind of expect those things to happen. And the guy is, he's not the best guy around. You know, he's got his own little problems going on. And it doesn't take him long to kind of figure what he wants to do with the contract in the story, which I really liked. So that was kind of fun. When you did the character, was the person in the story who was interacting with the devil, was he based on somebody you knew, or is he somebody that is in your imagination?
Not particularly. I mean, I think sometimes subconsciously when we create characters, we throw little traits in there or memories of interactions with people that we know. But specifically speaking, this is any particular person in my life.
I get a kick that he's wearing what the type of shirt they call a wife beater. You know, and I don't know if that was that intentional. I mean, when you worked it out with the artist to do this story, and it looks like it's San Espina. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Was that intentional to give him that kind of a look to him?
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to give him a certain kind of trailer park look. That he was in poverty, obviously didn't have a lot of money, and he was struggling. I was definitely playing off a little bit of a stereotype there, mm-hmm. but it works towards the theme of the story, which comes around in part two.
Right. We'll get to that in a second, but let's go ahead and get to the second story, which is called The God Complex. What's the basic idea behind The God Complex?
The basic idea is actually part of a longer novel that I eventually wanted to one day write, which I was taking certain themes on with this story, but it comes to the point, it talks about science in terms of we want to answer really big questions in science, and there's always a battle between science and religion. What's too much knowledge for humanity to understand? Would we ever reach that point where we're understanding something that's just beyond our understanding? And I wanted to take that. And I'm not overly religious. I don't necessarily have a religious message with the story, but it kind of plays with the what if that, what if there is a God and he's really enjoying watching all these scientists try to come to do astrophysics and quantum mechanics and all these crazy science stuff. And what would he think of that in the end, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to watch because, you know, the what basically happens in there is and I use quotes, but it looks like God confronts a scientist about what's going on. And it ends so superbly. I really love the ending. The scientist doesn't necessarily think that he's necessarily been doing the right thing with these kinds of things, and there's a quite an interesting little smile on God's face as he walks out of this classroom, as the scientist does, and it's a really well done story. I, you know, so many times I see, and I think you've hit on something here, people are always arguing that science and God ought to work well together, that you should be able to figure out God through science and that kind of stuff. It kind of, you're kind of hinting in this story that that may not necessarily be true.
Yeah, to put it bluntly, I mean, I know a lot of people that say they don't go together, and a lot of people say that they do go together, and I think it's a very interesting topic, and I've definitely studied it in college, and I researched it after I got out of college, and I always like to stay up and up on the latest talks and the latest discussions on the issue. This is one where I like to say, well, what if there really is a God and he really is controlling everything, then he has all the answers and he must be having a grand old time seeing us tinker with it. So This is definitely not a benevolent almighty.
Yeah, well, God is kind of, let's just say he likes being God and he likes being in the position that he's in and kind of enjoys humanity struggling to figure things out and not necessarily knowing. So it's an interesting perspective on God because, you know, we don't always look at God the same way. Some people look at God as a very, you know, you're talking about benevolent God and things like that. And we don't always see that aspect of him. You have to wonder sometimes if he doesn't kind of look down and go, oh, okay, you really want to do what now? So, and it's a really interesting look. I don't know if you planned this or not, but I got a huge kick out of the fact that God sort of resembles Lex Luthor.
I did not, no.
I've read enough Superman comics, and I just kind of looked at it and thought, gosh, that looks just like Lex Luthor. I wonder if God is Lex Luthor somehow. Kind of surprised me.
What I like about the character of God in particular, as opposed to the devil, who is usually a malevolent being, usually a being of evil, God has a little bit of a sadistic side. And so the scripture in which he's based is very ambiguous on how people interpret it. So there's been so many different visions and reimaginings of the character from books and movies and TV shows that he's really run the spectrum and run the gamma of personalities. So finding my own place to put him was a little bit of a tricky challenge.
But I was wondering if that was something of a challenge, because it's like Pestilence and all these other people, you can probably put them in a... You know, you can kind of figure a way to deal with them, but when you get it to the God figure, as it were, you have to, and then the devil too, you have to know what you're doing with that, or it doesn't make sense. Was that story about God a particularly difficult one for you?
No, because as I said, I've been thinking about this story for a while. Mm-hmm. I eventually wanted to use a similar theme and idea in a longer novel. So at this point, it was just a matter of repurposing and condensing that theme into a more workable story. And I know you said you enjoyed the last story, which featured Death, the Horseman. That was probably the trickiest of the three to try to craft my own version of Death.
Interesting, because you start with the devil and then you go to God, and now we're back to the devil in the third story. It's called On the Devil You Don't, which, of course, if we read the whole titles together, it's better the devil you know than the devil you don't. Which is interesting. And of course, this is where everything from that very first story wraps up. And not always in the best way for the main character named Jack. It's interesting you did a two-parter like this. Was it interesting to split it like this, put God in between two, like a God sandwich, you know, you got God in between the two devil parts?
I didn't really think of it like in terms of that. I knew that I didn't want to put the two parts back to back. I kind of wanted a break in between. Mm-hmm. Bit by hiatus and then return to that story later on. Mm-hmm. And the main reason doing that was just to throw a little wrench in the mix from the typical formula that I've had with the past issues.
There's a cool part in the second story where there's a businessman. He calls himself, "I'm just a businessman here to close out a deal." And it's the devil, and he's coming up to the police and people who have got a house cordoned off him. There's a reason we find out. What I got a huge kick was is that he just puts his hand up and poofed, knocks the police people out of the way. And it goes to show just how strong the devil can be. And that's when we get back to the discussion about the contract and things like that, which I liked. And the family and all this like that. And it's really a fascinating thing, because I don't know if you ever wondered these things, but do you ever wonder if this kind of thing really happens in our world, if somebody does this kind of thing and makes a contract like this? Maybe not necessarily with the physical form of the devil, but they sort of decide they're going to do this kind of a thing. Is that where the story kind of gelled from? Is it was you see people maybe doing these crazy things and we wonder how they ever decide to do it?
I mean, that wasn't an inspiration from the story, mm-hmm. but I definitely think it's in a non-supernatural way that people do metaphorical deals with the devil. They do things for greed or another reason, and they know it's a wrong thing, but they don't think about the consequences and they don't think about the morality of it. They're just thinking about, what can I get out of it? Something that's morally not right right off the bat.
When things kind of resolve, the devil turns to the family and says something really interesting. I didn't expect the devil to say this stuff. He turns and says, "I apologize for the mess and will reimburse you for the cleanup." Now, see, that surprised me. Usually the devil, in my understanding, once he gets the soul or whatever is going to happen, the resolution takes place, all that stuff usually just vanishes and human beings are left to pick up the mess. But I got a huge kick out of the fact that he just basically says, I'll reimburse you for the cleanup, no problem.
Yeah, like he said, he's a businessman. He doesn't want to do any more or less than what his business requires.
Mm-hmm. Then he has a discussion with the wife that I really liked.
What, at the end?
Yes, at the end. He's talking with the wife about the fact that, let's just say, the guy isn't necessarily, Jack isn't necessarily wholly responsible for all the things that went on. And I love the way that you did that. That discussion with her is kind of, in these kinds of things, there's usually not just one person who's at fault for this stuff. And the way you dealt with that and that discussion between the two of them, I really liked that. I thought that was a good thing because it's something to make people think. If you're in a relationship and things aren't going entirely the way you want, could it be possible that you are a part of what's going on as well?
It's definitely possible.
Because I like that. When he sits there and he talks with her, he just, he's really straightforward. he doesn't mince words. He basically just tells her things that probably, the only thing that makes it feel bad is that if this could have happened before.
The big theme of the story that I built the story around was that people blame the devil for a lot.
Yep.
The devil is the scapegoat for people's actions. Mm-hmm. And this story is about taking responsibility for your actions. And it's not just the villain's responsibility. I mean, everybody has a responsibility to what they do. And at the end, I don't want to give it too much away,
no.
But it's not just the main character's responsibility for signing the contract that ends up in the situation that it is.
Right. And I got a huge kick out of it. When the devil leaves, nothing's really quite the way it was before, which I liked. He tends to make things clearer than they were, which is something you don't expect out of the devil, which is something I really liked about it.
And that goes toe-to-toe with the struggle of trying to craft my own character that's both original and pays true to what he's known for.
So we talked a little bit about God and how you got this concept of God. As far as like picking the devil and making him into the character in this book, did you take research on that? Was this something you kind of already had in mind? How did you decide to make the devil this way in this two-part story?
His appearance?
Well, not only that, and it's how he behaves.
I don't know if I did any research. I mean, as you know, just watching movies, reading comics, and reading books, you have so much exposure to this character that you feel like you're so familiar with him, and you just know him off the top of your head so well that I felt like I was able to craft my own version of him right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Without doing much research.
Wow.
As far as his appearance is concerned, that was just a matter of trying to, once again, pave my own, fight against expectations of him and give him a fresh take and a fresh look and something that kind of goes true to what he is. He's a businessman and he wants to act like a businessman, so his physical appearance doesn't have anything to do with how he operates.
Okay, now you brought up something in my mind I've got to ask. If the devil is a businessman, do businessmen have the devil in them? Is this a kind of once in a while thing, or
a little bit of an allegory?
Mm-hmm.
No, I wouldn't put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I would say in the story, like the devil says in the story, he tried to do things one way with fire and brimstone and a lot of theatrics, and at the end of the day, it works a lot better just to be a straightforward shooter and have contracts and wear suits and carry a briefcase. And sometimes that straight shooting attitude goes a long way as opposed to the big, bad Prince of Darkness.
Because I still think there are some businessmen who have this sort of characteristic, because you can't really paint the devil as a businessman unless there are businessmen who have this sort of aspect to them, and maybe not a lot, but I imagine there are some out in this world that are that this devil could be easily patterned after.
It's certainly possible. I wouldn't say that a lot of big time businessmen are the kindest and nicest of people, but there are out there, and there are those that are more prone to sinful dealings.
Okay, when you talked about that, it just came along to my, it rushed into my head that maybe. I don't know, because there's a time right now where not all business people are looked on very positively, and there may be justification for some of that, but...
I'm not going to argue with you.
Now we get to the final story of the book. Final story of the anthology is all four issues. It's called At Death's Door, and this is where we kind of wrap up a couple of things, which is, I really like the fact that you alluded to previous stories in this one. Do you want to give a basic idea of what At Death's Door is about?
So, as I said before, death was kind of the hardest to craft my own take on the character. So what Death's Door is really about is death has probably been around as long as there's been life. Mm-hmm. And Death's job, obviously, is to deal with all the people dying, and there's a lot of life out there. So, I mean, think about if you had to do your same job for a long period of time, over and over and over and over again, how would you kind of feel about it? And asking yourself those questions is how I molded and created the story that Death is a little bit sick of it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, because, well, let's just say the person who comes and talks with him has an important role to play in the story as well. You know, he's basically in a house, and a person comes in and asks him if anybody's home, and he asks, come on, Death, where are you hiding? And Death, of course, he's taken on a look of a average male, shall we say, sitting around putting a drink on his stomach. It's big enough, and he's watching the television.
8 o'clock.
Yeah. And I got a huge kick out of that because, you know, even Death can kind of get tired of it after a while. But then this person interacts with them, and then they start to, let's just say Death starts to change slightly, and you have a great big surprise for us at the end, which I really loved. I was really shocked by how things went at the end. I love that because, you know, one of the things I like about your writing tremendously is the fact that I'm never quite sure where you're going to end up. And it kind of looked like you were going to go one direction, and you kind of pivoted another direction, which I always love. I love a surprise, and that surprised me a lot.
Just say the story does have an abrupt end.
I really liked that a lot. It was really good stuff. And then you've got like a text thing at the end that's fun to read. And you say something in there that's kind of that intrigued me, of course, when I read it. Is this the end of Modern Testament? Yes and no. And I always get a kick out of that. It's something that's really well done. I'm just sure you've got other ideas for stories in there.
Well, I would say, I think what I say in the letter is that in its current form, it will end. I'm not going to keep putting out the volumes and keep doing it in its own format. But I do have other ideas, and I like the themes, and I like the genres and the characters. So I do have some ideas in mind to kind of keep it going in different formats and in different ideas.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. Because they've been real entertaining and real thought-provoking stories. It was things I really like about them. And so I'd like to see that continue. So I don't know what form you want to do. You probably have several ideas as to what you're going to do with it moving forward. But I do want to see it continue.
I'm being tight-lipped for now.
Okay.
But I will say this, that I believe Insane Comics will be collecting the 4 volumes into a trade. And in the trade, we will also be including the 2 free comic book day shorts that were previously digital only. They'll be in print for the first time. Have a trade exclusive story to it.
Mm.
So it will have new material that has not been released before.
Well, that'll be fun. Do you have any idea when that's going to come out?
The trade, I mean, I believe that the plan is to release it 6 months after the release of Volume 4, which I just heard was delayed.
Oh.
It's gotten delayed, so it will not be released until probably early July.
Okay. Well, 6 months after that, if they could get it out around Christmas
December, January, yeah.
Christmas time would be an ideal time to put this kind of a thing out, because it's very thought-provoking, and I think people would really enjoy it.
Well, thank you.
Are you going to get a new cover?
I believe so, for the trade.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you'll include the other covers and stuff that we've seen so far.
Absolutely. I will be doing a gallery of sorts with all the pinups and all the covers, so it will be definitely a jam-packed book.
Oh, good. That'll be good. I still think if you can get out around Christmas, that'd be an ideal time to get people. Because we're into mythological things more that time of the year than any other time. And I just think that'd be the ideal time to get it out. I hope they can get it out that time. So, you know, I've got Modern Testament for the moment is pretty much concluded. I can't imagine you're sitting around with nothing in your mind, no project that you're wanting to get working on. Are there things that you're going to make happen that we can talk a little bit about?
Sure. I believe I have a comic project that will be coming out, I believe, later this year. It's with Universal Comics, and I'll be doing the writing, and it's a good old pirate story.
Oh, that'll be fun.
It's titled Buccaneer Seas. I think it's a four-parter. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to that, as well as I'm writing a series that's kind of in the vein of Supernatural or Grimm called Werewriter that will be released by Phoenix Dream Publishing, and I serve as the writer of that series as well. And it's about a writer that's cursed as a werewolf, and as he travels the country looking for ways to break his curse, he encounters other supernatural beings, and he makes his living by writing stories about his adventure.
Werewriter. I like that name. I think that's a good name. So how often is that going to come out? Is that going to be a trade paperback? Is it going to be like a come out bi-monthly? How are you going to do that?
I believe what the way PDP does it is they release the comic digitally in sections. Mm-hmm. And then after it's been released digitally in sections, they run a print campaign for it.
Okay. Are you going to Kickstarter any of these, or are pretty much it's all going to be taken care of by the companies?
Werewriter might have a Kickstarter. I don't believe one is planned for Buccaneer Seas at this time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I got to ask you, of course, because you're working with several companies. Is it easier that way because you get to shop them around? No one company is going to pick up everything that somebody does. It's a miracle if they do. Has it been an interesting process for you to go around to different companies? Did you know them ahead of time, pick them? How did you choose which companies to approach?
I believe when I was at C2E2, I ran into Phoenix Dream Publishing, and I spoke to them, and I talked to them. I took their card, and I had this Werewriter project that I was working on. Mm-hmm. And so I'm co-creator of a project with somebody, and I said to her, I said, look, do you want to see if they're interested? And we approached them, and they were. And as far as Buccaneer Seas goes, I believe the artist, Mike McNaughton, has founded the Universal Comics. So that's kind of got into them. So he found it as almost a comic line, and they're having a bunch of lines that are being released at that time, and our Pirate Story is one of them.
Because I haven't heard of that company before. Where is it based in? Is it the Midwest? Where is it based in?
I think they're on the East Coast. I think he's on the East Coast, and it's newly formed, so he's got a Buccaneer Seas will be part of their initial line, their launch line. So they're busy putting all their titles together and getting everything all set up. So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Now, of course, when those things start coming out, are you going to be going to conventions to promote them? How's that going to work?
Possibly. I mean, it's still a ways away. Everything's still in production, so I'm trying to focus on that right now.
Okay. Do you want to do that? Would you like to go to conventions and help promote them?
I do. I have a good time. I met James Munch and was at the Insane Comics Book at C2E2. That was a hell of an event. It was definitely a great experience. Mm-hmm. So meeting so many people and telling them what my book, Modern Testament, as well as Insane Comics, was all about. And then meeting all the other creators in Artist Alley, it was definitely a whirlwind of time.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any conventions you'd prefer to go to? If you could pick one, they said, look, you can go to whatever convention you want to. Is there one you'd like to go to?
No, not particularly.
Well, let me recommend one to you. I would say New York Comic Con is a good one to go to.
Everyone says it's humongous.
It's huge. I'm getting to go back to San Diego Comic-Con this year. I was there once before. It took me 2 weeks to recover from walking all over creation because, you know, the whole downtown San Diego is taken over. Mm-hmm. You know, New York, of course, nothing like that. You're in a convention center, and there's some other stuff that happens in a couple of buildings around, but it's not like San Diego. Some of the folks in San Diego don't like it when San Diego Comic-Con goes on because it takes over their city from them. Yeah. And they don't like that. But New York is nothing like it. You walk two blocks away, they don't even know what's going on. That's the funny part about it. But it's a great con, though, in that sense. You make a lot of contacts. Mm-hmm. And you get to go around and kind of meet new people and find new things, which I really like. I'm going to be back there again this year. And, of course, when I do a podcast, I kind of have this little relationship with DC Comics where they let me, if they've got people that are interested in granting interviews, but they don't necessarily have as enough people to fill up all the slots, well, they can put me in there. I'll take anybody. I don't care who it is. I'll be glad to talk with them because I'm always interested in the stuff that they do. So it's always a big con for me. It takes me like 2-3 weeks to get all the interviews out.
I'm interested in going to New York Comic Con. It's tough getting tickets. They make you go through a whole FBI background check and see, try to try to be able to buy, just be able, just to register to buy them, not even to buy them.
Right, right. That's a process. I don't know how they're going to do it moving forward, but I wish they would. They need to, and then you haven't been there too. The one thing that happens too, when you go in and out, you have to pass your card at like an iPad, your pass. And then when you come back out, you have to do likewise. You don't just flow out. You have to, you know, have them scan your card, which is something interesting. So it's a, I've never seen that anywhere else, but that's the way they do it. They don't want people, I guess, getting their mitts on some card that somebody else gave up or something like that. But I just think it's a great place to go and find other people you want to interact with. So, I mean, that'd be my recommendation, but you have to see. The trick is finding a place to stay and traveling and stuff like that. That's going to be a little expensive, but...
Well, it's easy for me. I live in New York.
Oh, shoot. And you don't go to New York Comic Con?
No, I'm busy with other life things.
Yeah. Life gets in,
definitely try to make it this year.
Life gets in the way of comics sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I can't do that. Well, anyway, that would be my recommendation. So any other things that you're working on that we should be aware of?
No. I mean, I'm always working on stuff, but everything is a work in progress. So when I have things closer to release, I'll definitely hit you up and send it your way because I love chatting with you.
Yeah, it's fun to talk with you because you have a very thoughtful way of writing. Some people, it's just action-oriented, and I like that sometimes, but I also like stories that make me think, and that's what I think your books have done for me all the time, and I really like that, so I hope you keep it up. I hope we don't see the end of Modern Testament. I hope we get to see much more of it, as well as these other good books. Sounds like a lot of fun to read.
Well, thank you, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's a wrap for this episode. Be back next week when we'll have much more on the comics universes. But until then, keep reading your comics.